Right now, I'm very happy to welcome back to our program a good friend, Marjorie Cohn, Professor Emerita at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law, former president of the National Lawyers Guild, and a member of the National Advisory Boards of the Assange Defense Group, as well as Veterans for Peace. Marjorie is the author of Drones and Targeted Killing, Legal, Moral, and Geopolitical Issues. Marjorie, thank you so much for joining us on this night when millions of people across the country are trying to digest what just occurred with the Supreme Court decision that we knew it was coming, but to have it actually there officially handed down by the court, overturning Roe versus Wade, the 50-year-long right of women to autonomy over their own bodies and their own futures. I guess I would just like your initial reaction to what unfolded on Friday, and we can get into some of the details in a moment.
Yes. Well, Scott, thanks for having me. It is not a surprise. We knew it was going to happen. Alito's draft opinion was leaked to Politico in May with the same lineup of radical right-wing religious fanatics in the majority who reportedly supported that draft and supported that position back in December. But it's still a shock to the system when it actually happens and we see it in black and white. And what the Supreme Court has done effectively is to wrench the right to self-determination away from half of the U.S. population. I think there's no better way to put it.
Now, some 35 to 38 million women will be affected by this decision across the country, given the fact that some 26 states or more will actually put in place or have already put in place restrictions on women's access to abortion.
Yes, that's true. And there are at least 10 states that effectively banned abortion as of Saturday night. Another five states are expected to enact what are called trigger laws limiting abortion in the coming period. And once these trigger laws take effect, patients in Texas, for example, will have to drive an average of 542 miles to reach the nearest clinic that performs abortions. Patients in Louisiana will have to drive 666 miles one way, and in Mississippi, 495 miles. In Missouri, as State Representative Mary Coleman is trying to keep pregnant people from leaving the state to get an abortion. There are so-called sanctuary states, like my state, I'm proud to say, California, which is setting up a support system for an influx of people seeking abortions from other states where it has been ruled illegal or it will be made illegal or banned. And these organizations are providing travel expenses, food, lodging, et cetera, for people seeking abortions, which I think is great. Now, in Louisiana, Republicans are advancing legislation to allow prosecutors to charge abortion patients and providers with homicide. Usually we see possibly doctors, aiders and abettors, but not the people receiving the abortion themselves. And the SB 8, which is on the books now in Texas, and this same right-wing majority of the Supreme Court allowed it to go into effect even before the court actually considered the merits of it. It bans abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy when most people don't even know they're pregnant, and sets up, basically deputizes private people to sue aiders and abettors, or people who perform abortions. So that could be a doctor, a nurse, a clinic, an Uber driver, a relative. And if they succeed in the lawsuit, they get $10,000 and attorney's fees. It's like a bounty on the heads of these people that are called aiders and abettors. And I think we're going to see a proliferation of these really draconian laws banning or limiting abortion all over the country.
This really is the Handmaid's Tale come to life here, where we're going to have people spying on each other to get this $10,000 bounty and possibly other states. I've heard nightmarish scenarios of women who keep track of their menstrual cycles on a phone app, where this information, this digital information, could be subpoenaed by a court in a state that bans abortion to target women who they suspect may have had an abortion out of state at a certain period of time. You also have investigations that are going on or could go on in the future where women miscarry, and there are doubts about the miscarriage, whether it was induced or natural. You want to speak to some of these horrible scenarios of a police state targeting women?
Yes, Scott, on the internet, people can track what websites you visit if people are looking for places to receive an abortion, if their state outlaws it or restricts it severely. That can be traced. And if there are states that criminalize people who travel to other states, like Missouri is trying to do, that could be used by prosecutors. They could subpoena those internet records. And what was your second question now?
The miscarriage. Who are investigators could pry into your life to see if you actually miscarried naturally or it was induced somehow.
Well, it's very difficult to tell the difference because another name for miscarriage is spontaneous abortion.
Right.
And the procedure for dealing with a miscarriage, especially in the later stages of pregnancy, is identical to dealing with abortion and to performing an abortion. And so I can see now allegations leveled against people who miscarry and perhaps charges being brought against them or doctors or other people who aid in dealing with the medical issues surrounding miscarriage being accused of illegal abortion. The scenarios are frightening and endless.
To talk about the immediate and long-term impact of this overturning of the Roe versus Wade 1973 decision, we have to look at things like the higher mortality, the higher maternal mortality rates among women of communities of color and poor women. And then, of course, we have their great concern about some of the states that don't make exceptions for the life and health of the woman or those who don't honor exceptions for rape and incest, which means that you might have a scenario where a young girl raped by her father or uncle could be forced to carry to term a baby when she's 11, 12, or 13 years old. This is just, it's hard to imagine the kind of damage that's being done, that will be done across the country as a result of this decision.
You're absolutely right, and there are much higher incidences of deaths among women who give birth than women who undergo abortion. I should say, and I think it's important for listeners to know who's responsible for this egregious decision. Obviously, Alito wrote the opinion, but he was joined by Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. To his credit, John Roberts did not join in overturning Roe v. Wade. He said it was unnecessary to decide whether or not this Mississippi law was constitutional. It would be a serious jolt to the legal system. Roberts, who's very mindful of the legitimacy of the Roberts Court, sought to, if you will, split the baby. So let me just say that the Roe v. Wade set up a test where it was lawful to have abortion before the fetus became viable, generally around 23 weeks. That's called the viability test. What Roberts would do is to throw out that viability test and uphold the Mississippi law, which is what was at issue in this case, which is that most abortions would be illegal after 15 weeks of pregnancy. There were exceptions for serious health issues, but not for rape or incest. So Roberts basically purported to support abortion. He said, well, women in Mississippi could choose to have an abortion before 15 weeks of pregnancy. Well, there was a very strong collective dissent by Stephen Breyer, Sonia Sotomayor, and Elena Kagan. It doesn't say who wrote it. It was collectively signed by all of them, which is quite rare. And they said that under the laws in some states, such as Mississippi's law, that don't have exceptions for victims of rape or incest, quote, a woman will have to bear her rapist's child or a young girl her father's, no matter if doing so will destroy her life, unquote. And many of these laws, these trigger laws and laws that will be coming on the books, do not have exceptions for rape or incest.
Justice Thomas has indicated in his writing of the opinion that the right to privacy may be discarded altogether when it comes to contraception, same-sex relationships, or gay marriage. How much of a threat is what the Supreme Court has done here to other rights that Americans have enjoyed for decades upon decades?
Well, Alito emphasized that this decision, the Dobbs decision, only concerns the constitutional right to abortion and no other right. He said nothing in this opinion should be understood to cast doubt on precedents that do not concern abortion. The dissenters, however, were not convinced. They said no one should be confident that this majority is done with its work. And they noted that the right to abortion that was enshrined in Roe v. Wade is part of the same constitutional fabric as the rights to contraception and same-sex marriage and intimacy. And then they go on to say either the mass of the majority's opinion is hypocrisy or additional constitutional rights are under threat. It is one or the other. Well, as you said, Clarence Thomas filed a concurrence, and he said that the court should reconsider other precedents based on substantive due process, including the right to contraception, the right to same-sex sexual conduct, and the right to same-sex marriage. Now, Alito would agree with that. We know that there are two votes for that position because in Alito's draft opinion, which I said was leaked to Politico in May, this was a draft now, he wrote that the rights protected by Lawrence v. Texas, which is the right to same-sex sexual conduct, and Obergefell versus Hodges, the right to same-sex marriage, are not deeply rooted in history. And that's the test for a right to be protected by the due process clause. It has to be deeply rooted in history. And what the majority said was that there was no right to abortion in the 19th century, and therefore abortion is not deeply rooted in history. Well, here in Alito's draft, he said that same-sex marriage and homosexual conduct are also not deeply rooted in history. Now, Kavanaugh would not have signed on to the final majority opinion, which he ultimately did, if that was left in the opinion, the way Alito's draft had it back in May, because Kavanaugh wrote in his concurrence that overruling Roe does not mean the overruling of Griswold, which is birth control, Obergefell, which is same-sex marriage, Loving versus Virginia, which is intermarriage, the right to interracial marriage. And he said that overruling Roe does not threaten or cast doubt on those precedents. So what we have are, at this point, two justices. I never call them justices. They're members of the court. There's nothing just about them. Yes. Thomas and Alito, who apparently would extend this same reasoning they used to overturn Roe v. Wade to overturn the right to contraception, the right to same-sex marriage, the right to homosexual conduct. Kavanaugh probably would not. We have three dissenters who would not. Unclear what the others would do. But who knows what will happen when it comes down the pike. I think that those other rights are still very much under threat.
Marjorie, we're really tight on time. In about a minute, could you sum up what's the most important thing that President Biden and Congress can do right now in the short run to limit the damage here from this Supreme Court decision?
Well, if the filibuster were lifted, then they could pass a federal law that would enshrine the right to abortion. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like that's going to happen because of Manchin and Sinema, so-called Democrats in name only, who don't believe in lifting the filibuster, although they claim to be pro-choice, at least Manchin does. Biden should ask his Justice Department to scour all regulations that could be used to protect the right to abortion and prevent this really avalanche of tragedy that is going to befall us state by state. But there are things, I'm sure, that they could do at the federal level that would mitigate some of that damage.
Thank you, Marjorie. That's all the time we have, unfortunately. We'll have you back soon. Marjorie Cohn, Professor Emeritus of Thomas Jefferson School of Law, former president of the National Lawyers Guild. Appreciate you making time on this important day to digest what the Supreme Court did. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.